just making sure that you capture all of those rules and all of those details when you're writing these requirements. And then you give these requirements to the developers and they go, why would you design a product like that?
We've never experienced that.
No, that's never come up. You guys are totally singular in that one. Hi, Therese.
Hey, Adam. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Doing fantastic.
Well, why are you talking to me right now?
Well, believe it or not, I am today's guest co-host with you for the podcast.
Yeah. Welcome. I appreciate you doing this under no duress whatsoever. I definitely didn't just ask you last minute.
No, not at all. Not at all.
But yeah, Audrey's on leave right now. So we have Therese setting in for what's going to be the season finale of season one. So, for you constant listeners, I know it's a new person to host the podcast. And then I just realized also for our audience, they probably want to know who you are. Like, what is your role at this company and like, how long have you been here?
My name is Therese Aku and I'm our head of customer journey. I've been with Configura for 8 years and have a background before that in marketing and software. So I spend a lot of my time really understanding our customers, what they're trying to achieve, and how we can make it easier for them to work with Configura. So I work cross-functionally across sales, customer delivery, our user community, into product to really help create that whole picture of what we do.
Nice. And when you say customer, are you talking specifically about manufacturers or users, both?
Yeah, I would say we have three main customers at Configura: our manufacturer community, our user community, and actually, I would include our developer community in there too.
Okay.
That group is a great group of customers.
No, that's a good point. Yeah, because I mean, whether or not you think about it, when they purchase things from us, they're actually purchasing software themselves to build the software. So,
heck yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I like that. And since we didn't get a chance to do an entire episode about Therese, I decided to pull out my quick questionnaire and we're going to start there.
Awesome. Let's do it.
Okay. So, Therese, what is your favorite word?
My favorite word? Ooh, I would say my favorite word is try.
Ooh.
Try, because you will regret everything that you don't try.
I like that. What's your least favorite word?
My least favorite word? I try not to use the word hate. It's too powerful of a word because I feel like there's always some type of forgiveness or opportunity again.
I like that. Yeah. Well, how do you feel about loathe?
Loathe. Ooh, I can loathe something though. You know, like when your alarm goes off Monday morning, I loathe that feeling.
What profession other than your own would you like to attempt?
Yeah. If I could do like just whatever job I wanted to, or let's say like my retirement job,
yeah,
I would love to be like a nature tour guide. How I said, I love being outside.
Yeah.
I would love taking people on just walks to see different animals, trees, waterfalls, whatever.
Yeah.
That would be my dream job.
Kind of like that thing we did in KL.
Absolutely. Going through trails, knowing about the ecosystem, the nature, the wildlife. That sounds amazing.
Even the little leeches?
Even the little leeches.
What profession would you not like to do?
What profession would I not like to do? I don't think I have the stomach for medical.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like I'm someone, I don't want to hear about how you got hurt. I don't want to hear about the surgery. You know, like I don't like sports replays with big injuries.
Yeah.
I just don't have the stomach for it.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, that makes sense. I actually really enjoyed The Pit, which just came out recently. It's a medical drama about an emergency room that takes place over a course of a day. And it's on HBO, so they don't, not a single thing is edited. And I remember having to go with Lauren and be like, oh, I can't do this. I can't. Oh, it's too much. That was rough. That was rough.
I'm right there. Can't do it.
Last one. What do you want your tombstone to say?
Ooh, always ready for a good time.
Perfect. I love it. Okay. So what are we talking about today, Therese?
We are going to be talking about the Innovative Extension Award, and this is a newer award that we released within the past couple of years that is given out every year at Experience.
Yeah. What makes this interesting? Like, why do you think this one's valuable as an award?
Yeah, I believe this award is important because it truly represents what the manufacturer does when building an extension. It's a lot of work to build, maintain, and release this. So creating an award that allows a manufacturer to capture their creative and innovative energy really allows them to connect with our user audience at Experience.
Yeah, that's a really great way to put it for sure. I think that another thing that's interesting about this is that the way that it actually gets voted on is now by the development community, specifically the developer advisory board is the one that votes on this award and kind of awards it as well. The idea being that the things that can be interesting to an end user and sound like a cool, innovative thing maybe aren't that interesting to the developer. And that was kind of the goal, is to really reward the development of a fancy thing.
Absolutely. And what we'll listen to and hear in this episode is really around that complexity of that user request coming in and all the layers and iteration that takes place during the development process to eventually deliver something in an extension that can be considered innovative.
Yeah.
And that's a lot of work.
Absolutely. Yeah. This one's going to be a little bit more technical. This is definitely a more of a peek behind the curtain on development and how it works. So if we lose you just kind of know to expect the a little bit more technical level talk for this last episode of the season here.
Yeah, exactly. And it's a great peek behind the scenes, like you mentioned, into some of that effort that goes on behind the scenes.
Yep. So yeah, this year's Innovative Extension Award winner is Han, and they won based on their Key Wizard tool, which is a key-alike system that's a little bit more intuitive than what they used to have. As you'll hear, it sounds pretty painful, what used to be there for Han, excuse me. But now it's actually like a very intuitive type thing. If you're interested in getting a look at it for yourself and not just having me describe it to you, check out the awards page. You can just Google Configure Awards and you'll be able to find it from there and get a quick preview video that Nabiya, who gets mentioned a couple of times throughout the podcast, actually put together. Okay. Hello, H&I, Ann and Kodak.
Hey, guys. Hello. How's it going?
Hello.
So this is the first time we've had multiple guests on. So I figure what we're going to do is I'm going to start and go clockwise. So I'll have you guys introduce yourselves to the audience one by one. So Amanda, tell us a little bit about you.
Hey, guys. So my name is Amanda Adams. Some of you may know me from the dealer designer side, but I've been at H&I for almost 4 years now. I started on the design integration team. So you guys will probably hear me say DI team from time to time, but that is where I started on the CET side. And recently I am back in the design world doing work in CET every single day on the proposals and client engagement team. So I work with Jessica St. John and on RFPs and large client projects and standards. And so that is what I'm doing now. So it is definitely nice being back at it and using the tools that these wonderful developers that I've worked with for years have brought to life. So it's definitely changed my life and I'm really excited to talk about it here.
Yeah, great. Does anybody have a chance of knowing you from somewhere else recently, like maybe a big conference?
Yes, absolutely. So I was recently at Experience and it was an absolute blast. So that was my second experience in Orlando. My very first CET experience was 2019 in Orlando. So it was nice to kind of come full circle there. So we did a breakout session on blocks this year. So that was really exciting. And I have given the same breakout session to our H&I India designers and our local designers here on the H&I in the design studio team. So I'm trying not to use all those acronyms. So we have a lot of them here.
Oh, yeah. Aka, tell us a little bit about why you're here.
So my name is Aka Wan. I'm Brazilian and I live in Brazil. I work for Encodec and H&I for almost 10 years so far. This time with the QWizard, I think we did for the very first time another time with like a great tool merging UI and animations and the dialogues. And it was very nice to see the thing happening, because sometimes we think that CT is only chairs and tables and panels, and then we are building great tools that is not necessarily related to the final products. And that was very nice.
Sweet. Thanks, Aka. Vinny, can you give us a little quick introduction to who you are and why you're here?
Okay. I'm Vinicius. I'm from Brazil, São Paulo. And right now I'm in Bahia. And I am working with Incodec and HNI for about 3 years now. The QWizard was the first time that I could really bring my love to UI and UX to the table. And that really changed my mind. And I'm very happy about it. I'm also a writer. I have one book released and I'm writing another one. I'm also an artist plastic. And I like to create beautiful things. That's mostly the main thing in my life, is to create beautiful things. And I believe QWizard was one of those things that's, and now our baby is out in the world. And actually, there's a beautiful detail that last year I was exactly in this place that I am right now, creating the QWizard baby. And now 1 year after, we are here talking about that baby. And I don't know, it's a full circle, and it's a magical thing. QWizard is a magical thing that's creating mystical things in coincidence for my life. That's me.
That's awesome. Okay, so I do have some quick questions to get the audience to know you guys a little bit better. So when you're ready, I'm going to start with Amanda, and then I'm just going to go in a circle from there. Same order that we did before, and I'll just go question by question. So Amanda, what is your favorite word?
Spontaneous.
Ooh, I like that. That's a good one. Yes.
It was the first thing that popped into my mind when you said that.
Perfect. Akka, what's your least favorite word?
Oh, my least favorite word, I think it's pressure.
Ooh, pressure. Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, I don't like to do anything under pressure.
Yeah.
What kind of copyright do we have, Adam? Can we start singing Queen, or that's not approved?
I was about to joke. That's my favorite Queen song. Like, there we go.
That's a good one, man. Vinny, what excites you spiritually or emotionally?
I love words and symbols and art. I think that's the thing that excites me the most. Art.
Perfect. Amanda, what drains your energy?
People. Is that fair to say? Should I change my answer?
Nope. I think that's the most honest answer you could give. So perfect.
I love people. Don't get me wrong. I love people, but they are very draining.
Akka, what sound or noise do you love?
Sound or noises? Do you mean music? Like something like that?
Music could be an answer. Yeah, that's a pretty common one. If it is music, though, what kind of music?
Oh, okay. So sounds or noises, I would say the sound of a waterfall. That is the first thing that came to my mind when I think about what do I want to hear for the rest of my life. So, but I'm also a music fan, so I like everything from Brazilian music, jazz, hip hop, and reggae, and things like that. I'm really into the desert blues. I don't know if you guys know about that. It's kind of some awesome guitar players from the North Africa, like the Sahara region. Ah. So I'm absolutely into it. And that's it. I think it's music and waterfalls.
Perfect. Yeah.
I learned about desert blues today. I didn't know that was a thing. So yeah. When I thought you said desert blues, I thought you were talking about the Death Valley music scene, because I know actually a little bit about that. So
I thought we were talking about TLC waterfalls, you know.
You don't go chasing those kind of waterfalls.
No.
Vinny, what sound or noise do you love? We'll give you two.
I love factory noises. You know, that air conditioning noise that goes, I love that. I don't know why. That's just, that just calms me down. I feel like a baby in a womb. I love that sound.
Amanda, what profession other than your own would you like to attempt?
So it's funny that you say that, because before I pursued a degree in interior design, I actually wanted to pursue a degree in landscape architecture. And ooh. So it just so happens that out of all of the colleges that I applied to, the only one that had a landscape architecture major was the only one I didn't get accepted to. So I took that as a sign. I guess I'm not meant to be a landscape architect. And I went into interior design and called it a day. And then it's funny because some people ask me, they're like, well, what do you do? And when I was on the design integration team, like, how do you explain CET to someone who doesn't know what a cantilever is, right? And So I would tell people I have a background in interior design and commercial and contract furniture, but I work in software development. So It's the best way to tell people what I do in a nutshell and have them hopefully understand it.
Yeah. You don't go with professional chair picker? I've heard that one.
I mean, that's kind of what, you know, I do, but it doesn't sound as fun. So, no. I mean, honestly, like, I just rain on everyone's parade when they're like, oh, we want this kind of an office. And I'm like, well, we can do this or we can do that, but we can't do that. So I'm really good at telling people no.
Okay. Hey, that's a skill in and of itself. Ask us from the Midwest, right? Like,
oh gosh, yes, the Iowa nice.
Yep. Akko, what profession would you not like to do?
Man, I think I will never be a driver.
Like an Uber driver, like a Lyft driver, one of those kind of things.
No, I hate to drive any vehicle. So I would hate to be like a bus driver or a car driver. Maybe a bicycle, I like to drive it, but I cannot imagine spending 8 hours a day driving a vehicle. It sounds like hell to me. Yeah, but I do drive a lot, but I like to get to places more than I hate driving, but drive by profession, it would be a totally pain for me.
Oh, yeah, I can see that. Vinny, last question is for you. What do you want your tombstone to say?
Oh, I love that. My tombstone, I already had that right down. My tombstone, I would love to just have the consonants of my name because I want the vowels to go back to the creator because I believe the vowels hold my soul and the consonants my body. And so my tombstone, I want just my consonants to be right there. That's my answer.
Very cool.
I knew Vinny would have some kind of a cool answer for that.
Yeah, right? I was actually kind of like happy of how it worked out because I figured that would be the right person to ask that question to. So today we wanted to talk a little bit about your guys's award-winning extension edition, the Key Wizard that you guys came up with. Mm-hmm. And as I understand it, Amanda, the story sort of starts with you. I think the origin of this idea was yours.
Yes. So I can't take full credit for the origin because, of course, people who came on and had gone from the design integration team long before I joined it had the dream of making a tool like this. Because especially for the Han brand, doing Key-to-like workstations and offices was always such a time-consuming pain from a dealer designer standpoint. And at least for some of our other brands, for H&I, such as Allsteel and Gunlock, they have, you know, the option or dot options within the SKU or model structure to be able to order sequential keys. So you don't have to have a separate line for every single key number, where Han didn't have that. So Han, you did have to have a separate line for every single key number. And to a designer who may not be familiar with the brand or how some of the brand works, it is a very time-consuming process. So that's kind of the hard part about where this started was it's where do you start? You have such a manual process that designers are having to do, and there are literal pages dedicated to key alike and how to specify key alike within the spec guides. So as a member of the design integration team, when I first was tasked with, okay, we're going to make a key alike tool, I'm like, okay, so I know how to key alike manually, but how do you automate that? Like, how do you put it into CET? How do you make it work? So writing requirements for something that you don't even know what it's going to look like yet is very hard. So really, I started asking for, I don't even know if CET can do this, but this is what I want it to do. And then I brought it, you know, bring it to the developers, and it started with, you know, some of our other developers on the team, and they're like, wait, so you want to do what? And that's kind of where it went from there. And it becomes this beautiful story of working back and forth between designer and developer to really bring a beautiful tool to life.
Yeah. So at what point, Akwan, did you get involved in the process here? Like, when did that idea get to your ears? Because I know Amanda mentioned that there were other developers involved, but at some point you obviously got involved with the project, because otherwise, you know, it would be very uninteresting having you here. So,
well, to be honest, I got in the middle of the process, and I think Vinny and one more person were dealing with the project, and it's a very complex and huge project. So at some point, I was took from the project that I was working on, and then they throw me in the quizzer and tell, hey, try to do the house in there. So then we could join our forces, me, Vinny, and the other person that our friend is in. And then we were able to get things going, because it was impossible to take care of it with only one or two people, because it's a lot of work to do. And then it was like we get a very good triangle, because I am more experienced with animation and framework stuff. Vinny is the UI guy, because as you can see, he's an artist that happened to be a developer. So he was able to have time to take care of the UI. And Isetin is a brilliant developer, but he's kind of new to CT and CM at all. So now, and when that happened, we were able to split the tasks to each one of in your expertise. So when we joined, as the three of us, we were able to get the framework done, all the infrastructure, and also we could think a little better in the tool, because we had time to do it. We are not only under pressure coding things to get done. Then we could breathe and calm down and say, let's think on what we need to do and the best way of doing it. And that's it. We start in a chaotic scenario, and we were able to drove the stuff so we can get the amazing tool running. And we also have Nabiha working with us. Mm-hmm. And both the DI team and the developers team were kind of very excited about the tool, because it was a challenging in terms of software and in terms of functionality to the user. So it was very nice to get the a massive place and then get things, get the ducks in a row and see the things flowing. It was very nice.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I love how you guys are describing that pain you're getting to for your users, right? Mm-hmm. Like, you started with that pain point because you recognized it was something that maybe wasn't as fun, but needed to be done. So if you can improve that experience for your design community, that win is just so huge. So a huge congratulations to everyone on your team for focusing on that pain and letting mm-hmm. that drive the way you approached this.
Yeah.
Well, and I'd love to add to that a little bit here, because that is something that I remember when we first started working on this tool, and when it was first, you know, the idea was first being built. It was trying to describe to a developer what the problem is, because trying to describe what Key Alike is to somebody who is like, yo, I just write code. Like, to me, you make magic happen. So it's one of those that I'm like, okay, I have to explain the problem before we can start describing the solution. So part of what I actually did as the very first round of requirements were like, you know, hey guys, I have this great idea, you know, I made a recording of how to key alike right now, like how we have to do it right now and why we have to do it the way we do it. And I think that was something that really helped the developers see, okay, I see what you're trying to do and I see what, you know, the pain point is. Here's my ideas of what we should do. And that is, I think, the beautiful thing about how H&I and Encodec work together is that we see from two different sides of the same coin and we bring the best of both worlds together, because these developers have some of the most amazing ideas. And like Akka said earlier about Vinny, he's an artist. He just so happens to develop. And the very same can be said for a lot of the design integration team. We're all designers. We just have a passion for how the software works, and we're advocating for those dealer designers out there and our trade partners who may not know how to communicate, how to make, you know, a feature better or how to make a tool better or what they want. They're like, just make it better. So that's where my job comes in.
Yeah, absolutely. Vinny, so in the process of like kind of like bridging this gap between like, you know, Amanda's coming to you with a pile of fairly chaotic requirements and, you know, you're kind of like going, I don't know what to do with that. How did you make sense of that? How'd you proceed really? Like, what was the first step you took?
Like always, my approach was to begin with the UI, because that's the way my brain works. I begin with UI and then the code will following the UI. But in this case, I don't know if that was the way to go. That's why Akka came with the other developers to help me. And yeah, the way that I did it was to begin with UI and then the backend was following me. And I like to see the things first. I create the buttons and I create the labels and the all the beautiful stuff. And then I create the codes that make everything works. And that's the way that I do things.
Sure. I mean, in this case, it was a, you know, obviously you won an innovative extension award for the work. And I really feel like at the end of the day, the way the user interacts with the thing is what the thing is. So I don't think it's necessarily the wrong thing to do. I don't know if there is a right answer. I wish I knew.
Yeah.
But I think it's kind of cool that you started there.
I was just trying to create a web-like experience for the user, because my whole developer life is web development. So I was trying to bring this UI and UX to the CT user. And that's the hard part of everything, because we are inside of some rules of CT that we can't go further. And that was our game, to go talk to Nabiha and Amanda and say, oh, can we do something like this? Can we do something like that? Mm-hmm. Oh, no, this, yes, this, no. And I believe this back and forth with Amanda and Nabiha were what made the magic happens, you know, because they both allowed us to create the way we wanted, you know, and that's rare in companies. And I believe the freedom made the QWizard be what it is.
Yeah, that's really awesome. Yeah, I appreciate that idea.
Yeah, I would like to say that the fun thing is that co-creative process, because we have like many different ways of thinking and ways of calling the things, because the DI team calls the thing as a product and we call it as a snapper and things like that. And then we need to understand each other in different terms. But at the end of the day, we are aiming the same goal, but speaking different languages. And I think we got in a teamwork that allow us to understand each other better, because we are doing that for so long and working together for so long that we kind of know how each one of us thinks about the stuff. So that's nice, because it creates like a synergy in the team, and we don't need to be much formal or talk too many like corporative stuff. We are kind of discussing and talking and having ideas, and that it's rare in business context, I guess.
Yeah, absolutely. Adam, you chatted a little bit about like, hey, it's the innovation award, right?
Yeah.
And so what we're really describing is how innovation requires so many iterations, right? Mm-hmm. The way we're talking about, hey, the users wants this, but there's a disconnect between how we achieve that in technology. I mean, you guys hit the nail on the head. Innovation is hard, but what you're doing and what you're providing is so rewarding. So I would love to hear more. Maybe Amanda, you could explain on what that reward feels like, delivering something like this to your users.
So that's something that, Vinny was talking on earlier about, you know, this beautiful tool that developers and designers have come together to build. And, I think something that some people don't realize is how long some of these tools take to make. And I'm not just talking about development time. I'm talking about like going back and getting the data that you need in order to build onto this. I had to go back and peek because I was like, I know it's been forever. But the original requirements for this were finished 2 years ago. So this project has been well in the works for over 3 years. And so for the fact that it has finally come to fruition and all of our hard work has finally paid off, you know, it's been, I know that we didn't submit for the Innovative Extension Award for 2024. And it's because we were working on this. And so it's one of those, it's so big, it took so long. But a lot of what we struggled with was getting the data for, you know, exactly what SKUs, what model numbers have how many lock cores and which lock core number they require and what color it needs to be and what color's recommended. And, you know, there's a different lock core for an overhead as there is for a pedestal. And so just making sure that you capture all of those rules and all of those details when you're writing these requirements. And then you give these requirements to the developers and they go, why would you design a product like that?
We've never experienced that.
No, that's never come up. You guys are totally similar to that.
Right? And I'm like, look, I don't make the rules. I just work here. But it's... You're right. It's definitely one of those that being a designer and working with the product day in and day out and being in the software, you know, you start to think about there's got to be an easier way to do this. And that's something that I can say Anna Creek tells people all the time. Our design integration team is made up of a bunch of disgruntled designers that didn't like the way things were. So they decided to take things into their own hands and change it for themselves. So that's what the developers work with is they work with a bunch of crotchety old designers who have seen everything. And so I can tell you right now, whenever any of these gentlemen come to me with a, I can't do your plan A, but I have a plan B and I have a plan C. They already know that I'm going to come back with a plan D. Okay. That's like some kind of a weird combination of all of those. And I'll go, can we do that? And they're going to go, you're such a pain, but yes.
Yes, we can.
And then it ends up like the beautiful key tool. So that's something that, I can say Nabiha had a passion for, really making sure that as we got into the final steps of this tool and polishing up all of those little, you know, buttons and the workflows and how that, you know, goes from the user side, she made sure that it was as intuitive as possible, for a user. And I think that is something that CET has really thrived on, is being intuitive. You know, you shouldn't have to have, you know, a college degree to be able to use the software. So we kind of try to vet that out with our own team before we put it out into the wild for our trade partners to use.
Oh, that's definitely a good idea, I think, for sure, to like have that iteration process with a group that you know you can trust and communicate with pretty freely. That's super nice, mm-hmm. for sure.
And they will give it to us honestly. If the tool stinks, they'll tell us the tool stinks.
Yeah.
And if our own users, like internal designers, won't use our tools, how can we expect our trade partners to use them?
Yeah, absolutely. Aka, it seems like you might have some thoughts on challenges along this journey as well.
Yeah, I think if the Q-Wizard was built like 2 years ago, it would not be as pretty as it is, because I think the SVG support is recent, I guess. I don't know. 1 or 2 years, and that changed the game completely, because we were able to build UIs as beautiful as it could be in a regular web page using HTML or CSS and stuff. And another thing that it was very tricky to accomplish is the behavior, the interaction between the UI and the animations, because they are completely different universes. And we had the user to go to a dialogue, and then we throw an animation, and then we go to another dialogue and another animation. And the animation, you can call another animation, and we allow the user to cancel the animation while the user is doing it. And then we ask the user to confirm if they can, they really want to skip the animation. And then all of this is a mix of UI and animation that I never saw before in any tool we made in CET. That is many technical challenges to make this work, because all the animations are transient, and we need to keep the states of the things while the user is going through the flow. And then the user can go back, the user can proceed, the user can skip anything, the user can cancel everything at any moment. And we had trouble to make it work. But now I think we created another level of tools, because once we do it once, the user didn't want to go back. We don't want to have tools that have this support, that doesn't have it, all these features. So now anytime we are going to think another tool, we always keep in mind that we know that many things are possible. And we didn't know it about before the Q-Wizard. So I think the Q-Wizard was the cutting edge tool.
Yeah. You guys have chatted a lot about the requirements piece, mm-hmm. and just the challenge of picking the right tech stack. That's a little bit of a jargon that we use as developers, right? What's the right tech stack or capabilities to meet those requirements? So my question to you would be, how do you validate what you did was right?
That is a really good question. I think a lot of that comes down to the proof of how many people actually use the tool. So, I mean, that's how we know whether it was a successful launch and whether it was done correctly. You know, we have, of course, vetted it to make sure that it works, right? As in, it generates the correct model numbers and that kind of thing. But it really is the user experience. It's trying to take the guesswork out of it for designers. You know, you shouldn't have to read 4 pages in a spec guide to figure out how to spec your keys alike in your, you know, 300 workstations that you have on your floor. So it's just
absolutely,
it's just as easy as that, you know, making that easy as that. It's the hardest thing we've ever done. but it's one of those that to a designer, it should be easy. And I know that you guys have talked to multiple different developers and CET managers. And, it's one of those that if the tool isn't, if it's not intuitive and if it's not easy, designers are going to go to another manufacturer and use something else.
Yeah.
And we know that as a manufacturer, we know that. So that's why we want to make sure that our tools are the best that they can be in order for our trade partners to want to partner with us and continue to partner with us. And it's their feedback that continues to make us better.
Well, it sounds like you're doing a lot of listening. So if you haven't celebrated your listening and engagement with your users, please give yourself a congratulations on that part, because a lot of what you've been saying is how you listen and how you deliver. So a huge shout out to all of you for that.
And just also a huge shout out for all of our users who actually speak up. You know, it's one of those that whenever we have designers or, you know, dealers, trade partners come visit headquarters in Muscatine, you know, I get to meet, you know, these people face to face that I've gotten to work with on, you know, either CET support or things like that. And, you know, you get to talk to them in person and put a name with the face. And it's really our users that have spoken up that build our tools and make our tools what they are. Like, you know, I feel that a lot more now that I am on our proposal and client engagement team, because I'm using the tool every day. I'm, you know, making sure that design experience is flawless through and through. And I can tell you there are some things that still drive me absolutely bonkers about CET that, you know, when you're not in the weeds of actually working on a project, you don't realize, but, you know, you see it when you come back. And so I think that it's one of those, at least for design integration teams, I think that, you know, you should dust off dust and from time to time and take on a design project. Like actually, you know, I think it keeps you sharp and it keeps you humble to what, you know, you do for the designers and what is really important at the end of the day, because we're nothing without our users.
Absolutely. I appreciate this term that I've actually heard in the last couple of years called try your own dog food. There's a dog food company that wanted to make it so that their dog food was so good that a human would want to eat it too. And I actually think that that's like good philosophy in software. Like you should be trying your own tools to make sure that you think that they're sane.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. It sounds like you had a comment, I think, on the sort of listening part of this process.
Yeah, I remember when I get the Excel data they built with all the storage models linking to each related core model to it. I got that data and I was thinking, man, I don't know what is crazier. The fact that the user should know this by heart and do this one by one in CET, or that they created the data one by one, linking one model to the other, and then we just grab it, copy and paste, created some code to deal with it, and that was it. But it's I can feel the pain of the user that needs to do the key alike before the key wizard, because I really didn't want to be this person to do this. It should be awful for them. And then sometimes we have had a problem and then someone solves your problem and it's a feeling that it's not comparable to anything. When we're wearing a shoes that is hurting our feet, and then we remove the shoes, then we feel that relief that, oh man, this is so good. I think the users felt something like that.
Yeah.
The next time we had to do the Kia Light with the tool.
Yeah, exactly. And you heard it first, users. Developers care. They care about you. They have empathy for you. They don't want you having to do those mind-boggling Excel memorization sheets.
Absolutely not. I mean, that's about the worst thing I can think of, you know? And I think it's all about sometimes we don't recognize where that pain is. And that's like really the biggest problem is like we need someone to tell us in a way that we understand where it is to start with. Like, this is where it hurts. Well, that doesn't make sense. Like, how hard can it possibly be? And then you look at the Excel sheet and you're like, oh, okay. Yeah, I was wrong. Very, very wrong.
Right. Well, and part of this, and I know I've mentioned this too, is that, you know, when you key alike, when you're working with these products, is every single manufacturer has at least one full page in their spec guide about nothing but key alike. And they're all different and you always have to read every single one of them. As a dealer designer, that can be a lot. And as a manufacturer who has both aligned, you know, lines as well as open market lines, it's very important that we make it easy for our designers. And part of the philosophy that we use at H&I is that the less the user has to leave CET, probably the more they're going to specify our products, because if we make it easy for them, they'll use it.
Absolutely.
So the less that they have to leave CET, the better. So that was, yeah, those spreadsheets that Aka mentioned were a huge undertaking. And we had our design rotational members helping us. So shout out to Jordan Jones, who helped us with a lot of that. But we took the MDS files, which are model data sheets, and we took all of those for each one of our product lines and did a process of elimination by what products have keys, what products don't have keys. And then if it does have keys, how many key cores does it need? What color does it need? What model number does it need? So on and so forth. So that's what these sheets had. And believe it or not, until this project came to fruition, we didn't have that data. Like, as a manufacturer, you would think that we would have that laying around somewhere, right? And we did for some of the lines, but some of them we didn't. So it was definitely like a huge undertaking as a corporation to, you know, learn about what is and isn't important to your users. You know, if you don't even have this data, how are your users supposed to be able to easily specify it and get it correct?
Yeah. I think Therese and I have seen multiple times over the years where a manufacturer has some sort of thing you'd expect them to have a full data set for and they don't. And then they go and disappear for a while to go find it.
Yeah.
Or go make it.
Or make
it.
Or go
make it. Exactly.
I'm interested to know, because I think as a developer, whenever I'm describing my job, or at least the development job, to my wife, it boils down to this sort of system of growing incredibly frustrated and then getting a hole in one moment when you actually get the thing. And it's just like a constant cycle between those two states.
Oh, I'm curious. Cycle.
Yeah, exactly. I'm curious if Akwan or Vinny have any of those stories, any of those like real hole-in-one moments from winning, beating some sort of super tough part. And I see Akwan raised his hand, so I'm guessing he's got one.
Yeah, I went to CTX 2 years ago, like 2023. And then a home user saw me with Felipe and she started to yell and hug me that, hey, thank you for that tool you made. Like, I think it was H&I Notebook. It was not me that made the tool, but I felt her, she was grateful and excited to use a thing that changed her daily life to better, because I think it was, she had a problem and we solved it and she was so happy. And I feel like, man, this is real. People are using it, because we work in a different country. We home office, and sometimes we lost the material stuff You know, we sometimes you don't feel that things are real, that the people actually use what we are making, because we are kind of alienated from the result of what we are doing. I think that's the for me is the most excited stuff to know that we could have a positive impact on people's life. That's very nice.
Yeah. I'd be riding that high for a while, personally. Like, and I imagine you probably were too.
Yeah, that stood out to me, Adam. I think we need a campaign at Experience. Hug a developer.
ask first. No,
we just need to have the developers wear like free developer hugs, you know, shirts. And that's how you know they're available for hugging.
I'll talk to marketing instead of Hinklepins next year. Maybe we can get some free developer hug shirts for the developers that go to Experience next year.
I second that.
You were talking about how you explain your job to your wife, and I was thinking, how do I explain it? And I have two ways to explain this to my stepdaughter and to my wife. I say to them that I am a digital makeup artist, that I just like beautiful digital things. And that I am working with the real life The Sims. You know, the game The Sims?
Yeah.
Because that's basically what we do here in CT. We design stuff and houses. And I believe we have already an extension that we add people to walk in the offices, right? So it's a real life The Sims. And that's the way that I explain to them what do I do. Because I just sit there.
Just
in my
everything
computer.
You add to your drawing is real money.
Yes.
But at the same time, just like Aka was saying, everything is unreal. Because, for example, when we finished the QWizard project, in the next day we were already working in another project. So
yeah,
forget that and let's go there. You know, so everything is, we don't touch anything, and just our computer in our houses, and everything is far away in a way, you know.
It's sort of intangible, the work that you're doing in a way, and with an extra couple of layers on top of the intangibility. Obviously you work on software, so there's always a bit of intangibility, but then you know, you don't get a chance to interact with the users all that often. You don't get a chance to see the fruits of your labor all that often, so those times you do get a win are huge.
And business moves faster than ever today.
Oh my gosh.
Whether you're at corporate, you're at the dealership, you're developing, we're moving faster than we ever have.
Yeah, so absolutely.
Take those extra moments to celebrate and win and consent on hugs. But do those celebrations.
Yeah, absolutely.
I love it. So when I think about a lot of what we've talked about today during our time together, I have one request of you. What would be your piece of advice that you would give to another person, could be a developer, a user, UI, UX, looking to spark innovation within their company? Because I'm circling back to that innovation award. Mm-hmm. What would be that one piece of advice that you would give someone trying to achieve innovation?
So I can start on this if you don't mind.
Heck yeah, go for it.
I think this is part of the thing that I lived by on the design integration team, is asking for that pie in the sky. Like, I don't know what is possible, but I'm going to ask for what I think would be the coolest thing ever. And if they can do it, great. If they can't, we'll figure it out. Because what's the worst they can say? No.
Exactly. Ask the question. I love it. Don't be afraid.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What about you, Aka? What piece of advice would you give?
I think on the developer side, it's pretty much the same thing, that we need to always assume that the worst thing we can get is a no. So it's worth trying to do new tricks with the language, with the software, and assuming everything is possible, knowing that it's a lie, but we can imagine that everything is possible. And then when we assume that everything's possible, we get a freedom to experiment with the technical stuff. And then sometimes We get new ideas and we get new ways of doing things. And many things are not possible when we know it because we are not silly. But sometimes trying to do the impossible, we find out different ways to do what is possible. Right? I don't like that motivational stuff like, hey, do it. They don't know that is impossible when they do it. But because sometimes we know what is impossible. And I think knowing that is a strength, is not a weakness. Because since we know what is not possible to do, we aim at the possible in the edge of the impossible. And I think that the language offers a lot of limitation, but it always offers a lot of different ways of getting things done. And I think it's a good way of thinking that we know the limitation, but we also have to have patience to find different ways of doing stuff inside the limitations.
Fabulous. And you, Vinny, if you were to leave me with a piece of advice, what would it be?
There is a saying from Jung, Carl Jung, that he says that we need to look at the places where you fear the most, and we need to look at where the pain dwells inside of ourselves. Because when there is a place that has pain, there is work to be done. And that's what Amanda did. She noticed the user's pain to create this process, and there was work to be done. And that's my piece of advice. We need to always be looking at the places we fear the most, and there is most pain in our lives. And this goes from to work to our lives. So, yeah, Gustav Jung.
Why am I not surprised if any had the super insightful, like, thing you can take home to use your rest of your life?
Right. I love it. I think I'm going to go write it on my desk for the hard days, you know?
Yeah, for sure. Well, thank you guys. And good job, H&I, and good job in Kodak, and good job, Therese.
Oh, thank you, you guys. It has been a pleasure being here today. Yeah. And I'm proud of you. I'm happy that you're here. You've achieved a lot. And from the bottom of my heart, it is great to see you at Experience every year, continuing to push the envelope in what you do and pushing our community forward. You are recognized, you're important, and you're heard. So please keep this up.
Thank you very much. And thank you, everyone. It was a definite pleasure. And I hope that, you know, H&I and Kodak continue to push that envelope. And I just can't wait to see what we're cooking up next.
Ooh, a teaser? Anything?
Oh, no,
ooh.
I'm not going to give you any information. We got some good stuff.